COVID-19 cases are surging again around the world. Some countries have reimposed restrictions they just lifted. So what's behind this rise in infections? And what should we expect? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the program. I'm Rob Matheson. COVID-19 cases are on the rise in more than 100 countries. The Omicron variant dominates those infections. Its two main mutations, known as B.4 and B.5, are harder to track and resistant to vaccines. The next few months are going to see an increase in global travel as millions take their summer holidays, and that's likely to increase the spread of COVID-19. Those in the pandemic-hit tourism industry were hoping to recover this season as restrictions began to ease in many places, but that could change. The head of the World Health Organization says the pandemic is not over.
Driven by BA4 and BA5 in many places, cases are on the rise in 110 countries, causing overall global cases to increase by 20%, and deaths have risen in 3 of the 6 WHO regions, even as the global figure remains relatively stable. This pandemic is changing, but it's not over. Our ability to track the virus is under threat as reporting and genomic sequences are declining, meaning it's becoming harder to track Omicron and analyze future emerging variants.
Well, restrictions are coming back in some places and they could again become part of everyday life. Italy has extended the need to use masks on public transport until the end of September. Germany and Ireland are thinking about making them mandatory in a few months. And the new variants are more resistant. The WHO and several other organizations are encouraging more vaccination campaigns and booster shots. China has maintained some of the toughest restrictions, but other countries have been easing them. And if cases continue to rise, we may see a return to government-imposed lockdowns and stricter contact tracing everywhere. OK, let's bring in our guests. In Rabat, we have Azzedine Ibrahimi. He's director of MedBiotech and professor of medical biotechnology at Mohammed V University. In Barcelona, Jeffrey Lazarus is head of health systems research group at Barcelona Institute for Global Health. And in Mumbai, Dr. Ishwar Kalada, an infectious disease specialist and secretary general of the Organized Medicine Academic Guild. A warm welcome to you all. Thank you very much indeed for being with us. Dr. Kalada, I want to start with you. Are these spikes that we're seeing mainly down to countries opening up, or is there something else at play here?
We just heard what Dr. Tedros was telling from WHO. Now, what we are looking at is only increase in number of cases, but we are not looking at the trajectory. How many of those cases require oxygen? How many of them are landing up in hospital? How many of them require ICU? And how many of them are dying? If you look at the global deaths till today in last 2.5 years, it is 1.2% of the total cases. That is called case fatality rate. But currently with Omicron, that has come down to 0.1% to 0.2%. That is 1 in 1,000 to 2 in 1,000. And that's why the Omicron variant, I have been labeling for last several months as a variant of support rather than variant of concern. If we look at currently, yes, there is a surge in cases, but mainly surges in USA, North Korea, Taiwan, France, Germany, Italy, and UK. And they are very small in population as compared to India. Like, for example, France is a 0.5% of India's population, but reporting 10 times more cases. So there is some problem there. BA.5 is more important there. Suddenly in India, we have seen yesterday that BA.2.75, which is a new sub-variant, has been detected just only yesterday. And there are so many cases. But all these sub-variants, whether it is a BA.2 or BA.4.5, they are highly infectious, but they are not lethal. They are not killer. They are not giving you morbidity and mortality both. So by that way, we are not doing bad. And I don't think that lockdown situation will come back again. I don't think that many more restrictions will come back again.
Azzedine Ibrahimi, you were nodding all the way through that. Is this situation that we're facing now very different to the situation that we were in when COVID first came to pass?
Well, actually, I agree with my friend from India. I think what we are seeing in Morocco actually is the same situation. We have higher infection rates in Morocco right now, but when we look at the hospitalization and the death rates, the numbers stays actually very limited and the numbers are really stable. So I think what we are looking at, I think the highest problem we got it with Delta. I don't think that I'm comparing to Omicron, but comparing last year at the same time in Morocco, we have the Delta. And the Delta, we had high infection and high rate mortality and hospitalization. In Morocco right now, we have really very strong peak, if I may say, of infection, but beside that, we don't see hospitalization or death. We are not looking at the same virus almost, I have to say that. And I have to say that comparing Delta to BA4 or 5, actually, we are not looking at the same virus almost. So I strongly think that the approaches should be changing. And to talk about the COVID, I think we are not at March 2020, but we are at June or July 2022, and a lot of things are changing. Mm.
Jeffrey Lazarus, according to our first two guests, my impression is that things are actually improving, that things are getting better. Is that your interpretation of it? Are there things that we should be looking at?
I'd like to agree, and obviously we have people with fewer severe symptoms, fewer deaths, because the vaccines are working. On the negative side, I mean, the elephant in the room is really long COVID, persistent symptoms occurring after 4 weeks, and for some people after 3 months, 6 months, and not just fatigue, sore throat and cough, but serious symptoms that can even be permanent, like thinning of the brain membrane and reduced lung capacity. We also have concerns that there's waning immunity with the third dose. The fourth dose, they say, is maybe waning even faster than the third dose and hasn't been rolled out everywhere yet. And my main concern really is that we're not preparing for the future waves, and there will be future waves. BA1 infection with that subvariant is not protecting us against reinfection with BA4 and 5, and it's hard to know what's to come. As Dr. Tedros said a few minutes ago, these are hard to track, and it's going to be very important to keep sequencing more and to build laboratory capacity in countries that haven't been able to sequence so much to date.
Ishwar Gurlada, the point that Professor Lazarus is making there is that we may have reached a situation where COVID at the moment is managed, shall we say, but there are longer term impacts, particularly with reference to, say, long COVID and how we approach the dealing with any particular variants in the future. What do you think are the risks and the concerns with regard to long COVID?
What Professor Lazarus says is right, that long COVID is a major issue. We do not understand completely what is long COVID, how many people will get it, who will get it, whether only symptomatic people will get it or even asymptomatic people will get it. But what we have seen over the year, 1.5 years or 2 years, is that those which were in the first and second wave till last year, June, they got COVID, they are having long COVID problem. We have not seen much of the people with the Omicron wave, they got COVID and they are getting long COVID. Maybe because in the Omicron wave, we are seeing mainly upper respiratory tract infection. And that is only fever, sore throat, a little bit lethargy, and cough, and little headache. But lower part of lung is not involved. Pneumonitis is not there. The oxygen requirement is low. So possibly those who required oxygen, those who landed up in hospital, those who landed up in ICU or kind of bed with ventilator, they may be facing more problem with long COVID. Secondly, what we have seen, those people with comorbidities, maybe hypertension, diabetes, aging, renal failure, previous lung problem, bronchial asthma, tuberculosis, they are facing more problem with long COVID. So we need to understand what is long COVID, and that is a precise reason that even though Omicron is a milder variant as compared to previous variant, we should be very careful about long COVID and what will happen in next 6 to 8 months.
Azadi Ibrahim, do you think that that means that the stresses and strains that we saw being put on the world's medical facilities aren't going to go away, that this it may be a pause until, as Dr. Galada was saying, and Professor Lazarus, that we begin to realise the longer-term impact of something like long COVID?
Well, I agree with my friends, actually. The long COVID could be a problem, and we have to be very cautious. But I think what we are saying right now, that's when the question is so clear, that it will be, if there is or will be a stress on the health system, I think it will depend on the countries, because the age will be a big factor in that. And I think in countries like in Africa, it's not going to be a problem, because I think now we know that the recommendation, there is two recommendations that we can make: vaccinating and immunizing people with older people or chronic diseases, like people with diabetes or HGA or other diseases of this kind. And the other thing is just distancing and masking. I think it will be very difficult, and we have to say it right now, to go and ask the population, the young population, to be vaccinated right now, because these people, they don't see the need of that. And as we are saying, that the immunity will be going down, and the vaccination will not give you a really a high immunity vis-a-vis of other viruses or subvariants, young people will not be vaccinated. Our hope actually is to go and target elderly people, people with chronic diseases, so that we cannot have actually a big stress on the health system. And you can understand that in countries where you have a young population, like in Morocco and African countries, I think people are not thinking about the COVID right now, but mainly thinking about other problems. Mm.
Jeff Lazarus, at the UN, said in May that 1 billion people are estimated in lower-income countries hadn't been vaccinated. Do you think that governments have become too relaxed, or do you think that people are themselves are just, well, shall we say, got complacent, that they have just decided that COVID is no longer an issue? How do you address that kind of problem?
Well, it's a combination of both, coupled with what's been a very slow rollout of vaccines to low and middle income countries, although that's getting much better now. As people hear that death rates are falling, fewer cases of people with severe symptoms, they are less worried. And I'm afraid that, you know, policymakers are playing into that, because it's not very popular to encourage vaccination, to encourage control measures like face masking inside. But I think they're doing a disservice to their population. Also, because as there's more transmission in the community, we get more variants. And as we've seen with Omicron, more subvariants. And with, you know, no protection against BA4 and 5, when you have BA1, with BA4 and 5 more transmissible, I think we need to do everything we can to slow down the transmission and slow down future waves, including the current wave.
Azadi Ibrahim, do you think that the world opened up too soon?
I don't think so. I think that's right now we can say it, actually. We have to have this question. Is it the end of the pandemic? I think it's the right question that the population is asking. And I think when we look at the curve, actually, how we got with the Wuhan virus, after that, the Alpha, I think we had the biggest problem with the Delta. With the Omicron BA1, actually, we have less problems. And actually, with the BA2, less problems. And maybe the sequels usually are not that good at the original version. So maybe, and I'm very optimistic that we are going really to the end of this pandemic. Coming back to your question, I think we didn't open just because really for health reasons. We opened up for different reasons. I think the recommendation is not usually just the health recommendation or the scientific recommendation, but there is the economics recommendation. We were talking about tourism also, that plays a big role. But I think the risk that we are taking right now, if we don't talk about the long COVID, I think it's well taken, and I think we have to open up, because we cannot keep up after 2.5 years with this situation. Mm.
Ishwar Galada, given that India was one of the countries that was hardest hit, simply, if nothing else, by scale in terms of COVID-19, COVID-19, and also India's economy is in difficulties at the moment. Do you think that there is a concern that longer term, if the impact of long COVID appears to be as great as people are concerned that it will be, that the impact on the country is going to be significant, and we are going to see India's economy and countries like India see their economies really begin to struggle and become under pressure in the way that we saw at the start of the outbreak?
You see, apropos to what globally people think about India, barring 2 months period of last year, 2021, April to June, India done very well. India has done vaccination to the tune of almost close to 2 billion vaccines provided. So 75% of the population is at least one dose, and 66% of the population is two doses vaccine. India has 11 licensed vaccines in India. They have vaccine even for children. And India's economy is currently doing fairly well. It has picked up very well. There are concerns always that when you open up, the cases go up. But they did not go up so much sizably in India to the width and breadth of the country, to the population of 1.4 billion. We have hardly 15,000-20,000 cases a day. Maybe there are more which are not reported, but we go by what has been happening and how many are reported. Relatively, we are reporting very few cases, but deaths are very, very low. Every day, only 15 to 30 deaths. Out of 30, almost half of the deaths are readjusted old deaths. So death rate is 0.1%. One in a thousand. So by that way, India is doing very well. Secondly, coming back to the question of vaccination versus what is the number of cases. Psyche in globally is that when the deaths are high, when the cases are high, people want to take vaccine. Actually speaking, that is a wrong time to take vaccine. Best time to take vaccine is when the COVID or any infection is lying low. At that time, you know that you are vaccinating people which are not infected. When the pandemic is going up, and at that time you are vaccinating, that means you may be vaccinating people who are infected or who are incubating the virus. So I think people should understand one thing. Yes, there is a global inequity, but India has come to rescue. India will continue to be at rescue. India can provide the vaccines at much of the lower price. The last issue is that some of the vaccines have a very low tail, like with just 4 to 5 months they give efficiency. Pfizer mRNA vaccine or Moderna vaccine. But as compared to AstraZeneca, AstraZeneca done very well. And that's the reason that India, having 90% of the people vaccinated with AstraZeneca, has done well. There is a study in Malaysia where they use three vaccines, AstraZeneca, Pfizer mRNA, and Sinovac from China. And they have seen the outcome of those vaccination and how many were the breakthrough infection, how many deaths out of breakthrough infection. What they found, that if one person died of AstraZeneca, 2.5 times more people died of mRNA and 9.5 times more died after Sinovac. So that means Sinovac is useless, and as compared to mRNA, AstraZeneca is far better. So that is the reason that India probably has a better vaccination, and the immunity out of vaccine may be lasting a little bit longer, much longer than the mRNA vaccine. Mm.
Jeff Lazarus, there was a big push at the height of the outbreak to try to give individual countries the right to license the drugs themselves, and indeed the capability of manufacturing their own vaccines and so on. How has that gone? Because we've kind of lost sight of whether or not those programs are actually working, and if they are producing the vaccines that people need, particularly, of course, in the African continent.
Vaccine production is incredibly complex. So even when you have the license, having the production facilities and all of the different components, sometimes as many as more than 100 components to make a vaccine, not to mention the filling and completion facilities that need to be in place, the storage, the refrigerators, and so on. So it is progressing. There is goodwill. But I think the difference really has been that capacity has increased, or the availability of vaccines has increased from high-income countries as people here got vaccinated. I think we need to be thinking long-term. We need to be thinking, well, how are we going to decentralize vaccination production or vaccine production more and allow manufacturing outside of the hubs where it's been until to date?
Jeff, do you think that the governments are actually still interested in making the level of investment that is needed, either in the vaccine production or in terms of getting people vaccinated, depending on where they are in the world, or indeed just creating systems systems, air breathing systems within, you know, air conditioning systems within buildings, in order to try to make them better and more suitable to try to control this kind of thing?
Yeah, so there's a couple of questions in there. So I think, it's going to take a big investment from high-income countries. And, you know, it's not just about the COVID-19 vaccine. This is an opportunity to increase production and productivity related to vaccine production in other parts of the world. Now, we really need a vaccine plus approach. Vaccination is not going to get us out of the pandemic. It's not going to end future waves or end the pandemic really as a public health threat. So like you mentioned, we need to make structural changes. We need to do two things. We need to be improving indoor air quality and how that works in buildings, particularly the new buildings we're constructing. But we also need to educate the population on how we can improve air quality through better ventilation, simple things about opening windows, opening doors, how often they should be opened, and having more CO2 monitors available so people can actually see the indoor air quality in their schools and their places of work and take action as necessary. Because it's not that expensive and not that complicated to improve indoor air quality when it's related to opening doors and windows. It is, of course, when you're doing major structural changes to buildings.
Ishwar Galada, do you think that were it necessary for governments, but the Indian government, to reintroduce mask wearing, to reintroduce restrictions within the country, do you think that people would be as willing to accept those? Or do you think that people are now sort of set they have the mindset that COVID is over and there is no problem, and therefore they may be putting themselves at risk?
Actually, you put on a question and you answered yourself. We don't think the government is in a mood to put a lot of restrictions now. And even if government introduces restriction, I don't think people will follow them now. What we need to ensure is that people, when they are indoors they are in crowded places like local trains or buses or public places or theaters, they should use masks. We should emulate good practices. And what we see good practices are in hospitals and clinics and starred restaurants and hospitals where everybody is wearing masks. So if we emulate that culture, I think that will be good for us to prevent even other respiratory infections, tuberculosis, problem related to pollution, asthma. So I think that will help. So that has to be a culture in people. We do not expect the government to put everything in order and ask people to do that, because people have done that for 2.5 years. They are we call COVID fatigue. So I don't think any kind of restrictions are required. And they'll be ordered in either national government or by any state government.
Zadeen Ibrahimi, are we at the stage where people are going to be required to have an annual booster for against COVID in the way that they do against other viruses?
Well, I think scientifically, I have to ask to answer this scientifically. We don't have the data actually to say that against BA4 or BA5, how long the vaccine will give us immunity. I think that question will be there. But coming back to what my two friends were talking about, I think the pandemic is different from one area to another. I think when we talk about India and Africa, most of the people, they are beyond actually the pandemic. They are not thinking about masking. They are not thinking about taking the vaccine. And they don't see even the need for that. And definitely, when you tell them that even if you are taking the vaccine, you will be infected, people will not actually get to be vaccinated. So I think there is awareness that we have to work on actually in these countries. On the other part of the world, I think what's going to happen, mainly people, they will be asking for vaccine of the second or the third generation that will give you immunity, and that will answer your question. If you are taking a booster, you want to make sure actually that this booster will be protecting you a couple of months. If not, you will not see the need for it. But we can say right now, for the elderly, I think what is really left of the immunity given by the vaccine is really very helpful for the elderly and people with the chronic diseases. For the younger population, I think it will be tough to convince them to go to be vaccinated.
I want to say thanks to all our guests, Azarine Ibrahim, Jeffrey Lazarus, and Dr. Ishwar Galada. And thanks to you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Rob Matheson, and the entire team here in Doha, bye for now.